Hello team, today we will have a conversation with individuals representing the total Army. Some tend to only look at active duty soldiers as making up the Army, not realizing that it's different positions and people that create the total Army. This includes active component, reserve component, DA civilians, and family members.
So I am welcoming this conversation to discuss how each component adds value to the total Army. So let's jump into introductions and then the conversation. We have representing the active duty component, Lieutenant Colonel Eugene Irby. And representing the DA civilians is Ms. Erin Thede. In addition, representing the reserve component is Command Sergeant Major Robert Priest. And representing the family members is Ms. Josie Beats. Welcome. Welcome to all, and thank you for your service. Lieutenant Colonel Irby, please share a little about yourself, please.
Hello, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Eugene Irby. I'm currently a finance officer in the Army. My current assignment is as a fellow with the Association of the United States Army. I have about 20 years of active service. My last duty station before coming here was with the NATO Land Command out of Izmir, Turkey.
Very nice. I must say thank you for your service, and I think it's going to be fun today as you are not going to be my co-host, but my interviewee, so we'll have fun today with that.
I'm sure.
Ms. Thede, please share a little about yourself.
Thank you. Well, I am a former active duty Marine. I have served on the Department of the Army staff now for about 19 years, most of it with the reserve components, both the Army National Guard as well as the Army Reserve. I am currently serving in a Chief of Staff of the Army Senior Fellow position at the Institute for Defense Analysis.
Very nice. And I love how you recovered, you know, with the last 19 years of being Army. And, you know, we'll forgive you for the Marine side.
Well, I have spent more time now with the Army than I have the Marine Corps. So
Very
now
nice.
I look at it, I just have an extended family.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for your service as well. Command Sergeant Major Priest, please share a little bit about yourself.
Okay, great. It's always uncomfortable sometimes to talk about yourself, but I do think my career really resembles a lot of what our reserve soldiers actually look like.
Excellent.
Minus the time I've been in, 36 years now, I think, collectively. But I started out active component like many of our reserve soldiers do, and then got out, transitioned, used a GI Bill, go to school.
Wow.
So I graduated with a bachelor's degree from Purdue University.
Nice.
Then later on, continued off my education. I got a master's degree from George Washington University here in D.C.
Very nice.
From a reserve perspective, transitioned to the Army Reserve almost immediately out of the Marine Corps. And as I said, used a GI Bill and then started working. And then was a traditional reservist through that time period. And then 9/11 was a game changer for a lot of our forces, just not the reserve component.
Right.
And since that time, I think I've had 5 deployments.
Mm-hmm.
And then continue to serve in leadership positions in the Army Reserve.
Right.
Raise a family, continue to work in the civilian sector.
Well, I thank you for your continued service. You mentioned, you know, former service as a Marine. I'm really sorry to hear that, but you wised up, so I appreciate that. But your son, I think one of your children, they actually serve in the Army, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, very nice. So I thank you for, you know, being that role model and being that, continuing that legacy. So
I appreciate
that. So then, Ms. Beats, will you share a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. It's good to be with you. So my name is Josie Beats. I am an Army spouse. I am a mom. I am a lawyer, a practicing lawyer with a small or a virtual law firm called SRD Legal Group. I serve on the board of an organization called United Through Reading, which unites military families through the power of shared story time. One of my passion projects, definitely. And I also founded an organization with a friend of mine called Mission License, focused on the licensing challenges that many people in America face, but military spouses in particular.
Right.
We've been on this Army family journey for 11 years.
Right.
Being an Army family, you know, it comes with its highs and its lows, but I really like to focus on the pluses, on the positives of being an Army family, a military family, because sometimes those can get lost when we talk about the challenges. And I do talk about the challenges a lot. It's been a journey the past 11 years of being a military family, but we are blessed with the experience and with all of the positives and negatives that it's brought with it.
So. Very nice. Well, thank you as well for your service.
Thank you.
All right. So I have a few questions that I'm hoping the questions will enlighten our listening audience. And the reason we wanted to focus on the total Army is to make sure they understand the different components. We're going to kind of jump into this total Army concept and provide our listeners with the understanding of how the Army, total Army doesn't just consist of our active component. So Lieutenant Colonel Irby, could you share a little bit about your active duty side, the active duty element, and then we'll break it down a little bit further.
Yes, the active duty component consists of full-time service members that are worldwide deployable and receive federal pay and allowances. Command control falls directly under the President of the United States. Federal authority over the service member falls up under the Title 10 of U.S. Code. And that pretty much states for the Army that they are given the responsibility of preparing and equipping and training for land combat operations.
Very nice. So we throw out, you know, officer and enlisted soldiers. What is the difference between an officer and an enlisted soldier?
Well, basically, enlisted soldiers are known as the backbone of the Army. They have specific specialties within each Army unit. Officers act as the manager to those soldiers. They plan missions, give orders, and assign those soldiers to certain tasks.
Okay, that's good information. Thank you. So looking at the regular Army, what percentage are enlisted?
It's roughly about 80% of the force is enlisted.
Okay, so now I kind of understand that analogy, backbone versus management. Good information. So Lieutenant Colonel Irby, why did you serve and why the active component?
Yes, so like many, I grew up in a military family from my grandfather's. My grandfather served, my father served, aunt, uncles served. So they kind of instilled that selfless service attitude within me as I grew up. Of course, what made me transition from the reserve component to the active component was, you know, 9/11. Once that happened, I felt the duty and the call to serve on active duty full time.
And then we have Ms. Thede, who you used to be in the reserve.
No. Actually, I former active duty Marine, but I worked as a civilian for both
Very
of
nice.
The reserve components in the Army.
Yes, you have an extensive background, actually. Could you share with us, I'm going to go kind of backwards, you have had an opportunity to serve in different areas. Could you enlighten our audience a little bit about your background as far as the different areas that you serve?
Yeah, obviously. So the Marine Corps, we won't talk about that. We push that to the side. It was just a great time in my life that I actually served. But the larger perspective for me is working for the Army.
Right,
you know,
right.
Again, I've spent more time with the Army now than I have the Marine Corps.
Wonderful.
And I was fortunate enough to be hired on at the Army National Guard at the DA level.
Right.
Learned a lot about personnel, the differences. The Army National Guard is different in that they have two bosses. They report to the governor and the state, but they also report up through to the president as well.
Right.
And when they're federalized, different titles. We, you know, in the active component in the Army Reserve, they live in Title 10. National Guard lives in Title 32. So while there's a lot of distinct differences, we're all still part of that one total Army that brings us together.
Excellent. And then as far as being a DA civilian, we understand, or some may understand, we're hoping all will after this podcast, that the DA civilians are key enablers to making sure the regular Army, as well as the reserve component, is able to meet both its non-wartime and wartime missions. So that is really, really important. So I would love for you to break down exactly what that means and how is the civilian workforce and what role do they play to finalize that total Army concept?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that the civilians bring to the table is that continuity piece.
Mm-hmm.
The military tends to PCS every, you know, 18 months, 2 years, depending upon, you know, the where's and the what's and who they are, what they do. That civilian workforce is there maintaining that knowledge base of what they have. But there's also, the Army takes part of the civilian expeditionary workforce. Right. So right. you can do an expansion mm-hmm. on what you currently do and do a tour overseas,
right. Right.
whether it be humanitarian aid, supportive structure, whatever the case, and then, you know, come back and continue that support in your expertise.
Right. Wonderful. And I think that's really important for our listeners and others to understand, you know, why the DA civilians are so important. So we don't want to forget that. But do those from DA civilian area, do they have the opportunity to deploy? Do they have opportunity to serve in the combat zones?
Yeah, it is. I mentioned it briefly, the civilian expeditionary workforce. Mm-hmm. So that it's actually a Department of Defense program, and the Army has taken and really pushed forward with that. And IMCOM, Installation Management Command, actually manages the entire program. But they have the opportunities to go abroad in different aspects, like I said, humanitarian aid, disaster relief, support to infrastructure, contract management. There's an opportunity that they could be eligible for 35% post-differential pay, potential for 35% hazardous duty pay. So, you know, it really depends on what the job does, but it's such a broadening experience right. for the civilians.
And so I'm curious, as far as your experience and how you feel personally, what drives you to continue to serve our country?
You know, I mean... started when I was very young. I come from a military family. My dad served, my brother served, my uncle served. So it was something I wanted to do. Of course, my dad was in the Navy. So when I said I was going to be a Marine, he about fell over. everyone thinks I finally corrected myself by coming to work for the Army. So I think I finally succeeded in getting there. But, you know, the role of the civilian has changed so drastically. It's not that, while it's a cute little cartoon you can make, the little blue-haired lady in sneakers running right. around and stuff, you know, it's not that. It's right. it's a real structured support role that, you know, is it's vital
right.
to what
right.
the Army does.
Absolutely.
So it's really important. And the opportunities mm-hmm. for civilians are amazing. I got my master's degree through the Army. The Army sent me to the Army War College.
Right.
I now have this opportunity as a senior fellow.
Wonderful. And see, I think that's very important that we state that it is vital to the total Army. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about your role as a DA civilian. Is there anything you would like to share with our audience? One thing AUSA really pushes is making sure that people are informed of just the diversity within the total Army, and why a young person would be interested in stepping out and joining the Army, may it be an active component or even looking into DA civilian opportunities.
You know, we work in both sides of the house, you know, between being active duty, working as a civilian, and also for a time working in the private sector. The opportunities that the Army allows you, the growth potential, the travel that you can do, the educational opportunities. It's just, I don't know of many other organizations out there that can provide that to you with that sense of family,
right.
with that sense of belonging right. to something larger than yourself.
Very nice. Well, I thank you very much. And thank you both for your time and this opportunity to have this great discussion.
Thank you.
So, Command Sergeant Major, I'm really interested in you telling us more about the reserve component and how it fits into the entire total Army equation. So what are the differences first in regards to Guard and Reserve forces?
So the Army Reserve is a Title 10 force. And then the Army National Guard is a Title 32 aligned to the states initially. However, they can be federalized under the right situation and become Title 10 forces and deploy to geographic combatant commanders around the world accordingly. Mm-hmm. But their first mission is to for support the defense operations in homeland. So that's the primary difference. Capability-wise, there is a significant difference. The Army Reserve is more focused on sustainment. Okay. 78% of the Army collectively, sustainment capabilities, quartermaster, transportation, those types of things, reside in the Army Reserve. 83% of the civil affairs component and the psychological operations reside in the Army Reserve. So the National Guard capabilities, they have the maneuver part of and the Army Reserve has the sustainment capabilities. And the maneuver capabilities, they have brigade combat teams, infantry, striker, heavy, that are comparable to the numbers and formations of Compo 1.
Sergeant Major, can you tell us some of the issues or some of the steps that you have to go through to transition from a part-time status to a full-time status, such as coming on for a mobilization?
Yeah, great. It's pretty extensive, but I would say you know about it in advance, typically, unless something really significant happens, such as a 9/11 type event. So a couple things, it can happen individually. You know, you have an individual capability the Army needs, but more than likely it's gonna be a unit. That unit will be alerted, will be notified, and then you'll begin what we call your road to war at that time, which involves your initial time that you're brought on active duty to conduct training in preparation, and then your time that you come on to actually deploy forward, and the time you come off and all the yellow ribbon events that come associated with that. But it really comes down to a Department of Army level order. Once that order is executed, you become a duty status, and that just changes in your full time until such time you come off and demobilize, and you go back to your previous status before.
So you stated you deployed, what, 5 times?
Collectively.
Okay, where did you deploy to? What?
Yeah, so I've been to Iraq, obviously. I've been to Afghanistan. Majority of my deployments have been to Afghanistan.
Okay.
Now with that, I've been all over, like most soldiers, all over the Middle East and all the countries that are associated with the CENTCOM AOR. It's just kind of part of the, kind of where you go when you go that part of the world.
I understand. Yeah. Okay. All right. Good.
Ironically, my son, you know, he was, I tell a story all the time. He was 11 years old when 9/11 happened.
All right. All right.
And and here he's got 4 deployments in Afghanistan himself as a young Ranger Staff Sergeant.
Wow.
So I didn't really anticipate that.
Right.
At the time when I went initially.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, it depends on how you look at it. Our paths haven't crossed.
I was going to ask that.
I'm
question.
Trying to make that happen.
Right. Like that would be kind of cool.
Would like to be able to do an airborne operation with him, something like that.
Right.
But it hasn't crossed. But he's doing a great job. Couldn't be more proud of him. And he's just a good example of great soldiers we have out there in the Army doing incredible stuff out there at that young age of 21 to 28.
It's very nice. Very nice. So you spoke about your son. So we, again, thank him for his service as well. Why do you serve? Why have you continued to serve? You spoke about that you have more than 36 years of service. Why do you continue to serve?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think everybody should at least ask themselves that question, rhetorically or not. Mm-hmm. But I think it's simple. It's the same thing as everybody else. It's a sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. The Army provides that for you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you miss that when you come off of active duty, for example, tour. I don't remember missing it necessarily. I just knew that I was going to transition into the reserve component and still be able to make a difference. They have the opportunity. The soldiers you have in the United States Army, the diversity is second to none in the world. Yeah. And the opportunity is second to none.
Right.
And you couple that with the idea to be able to make a difference and have a purpose.
That's
your purpose in life. Those are the fundamental reasons. And what keeps soldiers in the Army is the leadership and the people.
Wonderful.
Over time. If that wasn't consistent with our value systems, you probably wouldn't have the retention level you have in the Army.
That's great. So curious, so you served as a Marine and then you went into the reserve component for the Army. Were you able to couple that time serve on the military? You know, I'm a civilian, so excuse my ignorance, but were you able to combine that time served, or was it viewed differently because it was different areas?
Yes, it does. So the time that I started my time in the Marine Corps, my active federal service began. It's calculated from that time period. That part shaped me as a young Marine at that point for the future. And yeah, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I do get ribbed a lot about it, but that's okay.
I can take it. No problem. I'm glad you can. So I asked that question because one thing at USA we continue to express to our members and to their children, the different benefits and avenues you can take when joining the military and joining the Army. So thank you for that. So Ms. Beats, I'm gonna ask you a few questions if you don't mind. So what is the role of the family member and how does it add value to the total Army?
It's a great question. And you know, something that I think every military family to a certain extent struggles with, right? What's my role as a spouse? What's our role as military kids? I think, you know, there's a Air Force psychologist who gave a great phrase that is somewhat controversial, especially when we think about military kids. You know, the service member, right? We have an all-volunteer force. The service member has chosen to be there. Yeah. The spouse, you know, we could argue that I chose to marry my husband. I'm okay with that. but kids, they get drafted.
Right.
And so for me, my role or our role is twofold, right? We're a family unit. It's making sure that family unit is strong first. And that's both so that the kids and me can deal with the many sort of curveballs that Army life throws your way.
Right.
But it's also making sure that we are there to provide consistency so that our service member can serve the mission.
Right.
I've been involved in a lot of conversations about military spouse employment, a rising conversation as I've been married to my soldier for 11 years. I say that over and over again because sometimes I can't believe it. But, you know, having been a part of these conversations about military spouse employment for so long, it really is interesting to see that the shift in how we talk about it.
Right.
And we see our military leaders talking about military spouse employment and the many benefits that families get as actually being a part of a lethal force.
Right.
Being a part of making sure that there are no worries about the home front so the service member can focus on the mission, whatever that mission might be.
Exactly.
And I really have appreciated actually, and why I'm excited to be here with Command Sergeant Major Priest is we're seeing a renewed focus on our reserve families as well.
Right.
From the social, military spouse social groups I'm a part of, sometimes our reserve families get left behind because they're not necessarily co-located with supports that you have around the typical Army base. And so seeing renewed support of that as well.
That's good.
But it's really about keeping that unit together and productive and supportive, both for the family members and the service member.
Very nice. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, you co-founded an organization called Mission License. And I think that organization pretty much underlines what you stated. Will you share exactly what Mission License is and how that helps our military families?
Absolutely. You know, I am a lawyer by trade. That means that I have to take something called the bar exam in order to practice.
Right.
That bar exam is offered in the States twice a year. Right. And that is it. Mm. And it is really hard. And I don't ever want to take it again. So I've worked with an organization around military spouse attorneys, changing the rules for those attorneys so that they could practice as they follow their active duty service member.
Right.
That organization has now changed the rules in 39 states.
Excellent.
That's since 2011.
Right.
That's when everybody said there's no way you could make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we were very appreciative for that. But my colleague, Libby Jameson, and I, as we, you know, we rose sort of in the leadership of this organization. But when we looked around and we saw our friends who are nurses, mm-hmm. who are teachers,
right.
who are realtors,
right.
Working in all these licensed professions where there wasn't an organization necessarily fighting for them.
Right.
And we thought two things. One, we've done a really good job of telling our story mm-hmm. as military family members to a civilian audience who we thought wouldn't understand.
Right.
But we've realized once you tell that story, they are receptive and they want to help.
Right, right.
So we want to help people tell their story so that individual licensing bodies will give them accommodations and say, we understand this is part of your family's service. And so we're going to maybe give you a temporary license instead of a permanent license so that you can, you know, run your esthetician business or work as a hairdresser or be a realtor, real estate agent.
Right.
But we also want to take the experiences of those families and take them up the chain talk to decision makers about how state licensing regimes are necessary and good to have for health, safety, and welfare, but also overly burdensome for our military families. And so What are the things that we can do to accommodate that?
Right.
And it's been really interesting to see there's also a growing national conversation about occupational licensing generally. Military spouse, military spouses and military families have really been just the tip of the iceberg for.
Right.
So that's mission license. It's something that we're passionate about, that we think with just a little bit of elbow grease, we can make a big difference.
Very nice. That's very, very nice. So you've been affiliated with Family Readiness Groups before. Could you share a little bit about FRG and how it supports the military families?
Absolutely. You know, I think the first thing you learn, or the first hard lesson you learn as a military spouse, is support networks are important.
Right.
And whatever form that support network takes. You know, FRG's got a lot of flack for all the things that FRG's got a lot of flack for. But you can't beat the support system.
Right.
And you can't beat having that access to knowledge. It's so important to go to those events. We fall into a trap, especially with sort of the rise of Facebook and social networking, of thinking that that's our supportive network.
Right.
Even in the military spouse realm, maybe especially in the military spouse realm, right, because we move around so much, this is a way we can keep in contact with those support networks.
Right.
But it's really important to show up in person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important to participate in the FRGs. And I have a lot of conversations about with younger spouses, mm-hmm. Which does several things, including making me feel old, but where they're maybe apprehensive about joining the FRG, maybe they've heard negative things.
Mm-hmm.
I always say, because it's almost universally some hard charging, fantastic spouse who finds herself, you know, like I was at Fort Polk, Louisiana, and not able to find a job and needing something to do. I was like, then go and take over.
Right, right.
And make
there you
it
go.
The post best FRG.
Very nice.
And spend your time doing that.
Right.
Because they need you.
Right.
I'm very on the fence about giving the DOD free labor, I will be honest with you. But at the same time, right, it supports our military family units.
Exactly.
So I'm in.
Right.
I'm 100% in.
Very nice.
Same thing, you know, not every unit has like an organized FRG, but even a spouse coffee
mm-hmm.
or a networking event.
Right, right.
You don't have to listen to what other people say about these spouse events, whether it's the FRG or a coffee or just a networking event.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go and experience them yourself.
Excellent.
And you need to make your own mind up about it, because they can only add to the support of your family.
Very nice. That reminds me of that saying, be the change you want to see. So I love that logic you had there. Very nice. So, of course, I have to ask you, what keeps you, you know, driven? You seem so passionate, and I love it, you know, about military families and you as an Army spouse. But what keeps you engaged and, I'll say, excited about the military families?
So one thing we always have in the military is a new military family.
Okay.
And we always have sort of this, for lack of a better term, a database of military families who are leaving.
All right.
And sometimes it feels like there's almost brain drain in the military family space.
Right.
And so I really get excited about helping people see the positives in military life.
Right.
And I do that because it has been at times hard for me
right.
to see the positives of military family life.
Very nice.
And I will say that as someone who our family is currently going through the assignment cycle. And it's one of those moments where I really have to focus on positivity.
Right.
And coffee.
Right.
And my support network.
Very nice. Good.
But it's about making a better environment for folks so it doesn't have to be as challenging as it was
right.
when
right.
I came through. Very and I think nice. You see that a lot in the military spouse space, which is really inspiring.
Yeah. Well, I love to hear that. I'm an Army brat, and I remember hearing stories about my mother having challenges as she was, as my family relocated, and she's trying to continue to, in her career and just move forward. And yes, she, you know, it was years ago, but she definitely had some challenges of her own. So that's good to hear. Appreciate
well, and
that.
We're really benefiting from an ongoing conversation about supporting military families that I really hope doesn't go anywhere, or
right.
doesn't get overshadowed.
Right.
And I think, I don't think that will happen. I'll stay focused on my positivity, but
nice.
I'm one of the people here to make sure that we keep having that conversation.
Very nice. So this was great. And I have to say, Command Sergeant Major, I love the phrase you use, connected tissue, because it really provides listeners with a visual of understanding how and what role the reserve component plays with the total Army. And then Ms. Beats, you definitely have showed your passion, which excites me and I'm sure other listeners, understanding that the family member is definitely part of the equation of the total Army. So I thank you both for your time. I thank you both for taking the opportunity to speak about your areas so that we can continue the conversation about the total Army. And it, although we love our active component and they're great, we don't want to look past other the other areas and the other elements that truly make the total Army strong and make it the total Army. So thank you both for your time.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
I would like to say thank you to Ms. Erin Deedy, Command Sergeant Major Robert Priest, and Ms. Josie Beats. Thank you for your service. Thank you for all that you have done, that you do and will do in support of the Army.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Monday with a brand new episode of Army Matters with Family Voices. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.